Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
American Glutton Podcast has a Patreon. Do you hate commercials? Well, we've got a Patreon. Do you want bonus episodes? That's on the Patreon. Do you want to hang out and chat in our Discord channel? That's part of the Patreon too. We even have an option where you can leave me voicemails, all on the Patreon. So check it out today, patreon.com/AmericanGlutton. We have a Patreon.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. American Glutton is brought to you by Trifecta. The biggest factor in weight loss for me has been knowing ahead of time what I'm going to eat and having it ready when I need it. Trifecta meal deliveries have made this completely effortless for me and have been a total game changer in both diet and maintenance. Go to www.trifectanutrition.com/AmericanGlutton to make your life and physical goals a whole lot easier. Today, my guest is Nancy Cartwright. She is an actress and voice performer. You might know her as the voice of Bart Simpson on the television show The Simpsons. Please enjoy our conversation. Nancy Cartwright, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Ah, thanks. So glad to be here, Ethan. Just fantastic.
Good to talk to you.
I love it. I'm a fan. I am such a fan. I've been listening to, man, some of these guests that you've had on and everyone's viewpoints about their bodies and how they're doing and where they came from and how they've changed. And some of them are still, you know, it's constant challenge.
Yeah.
And welcome to planet Earth, you know?
Welcome to the human experience, right?
Yeah.
So the most fascinating thing for me is I always, you know, I went through my life with this perspective of like, you know, certainly at the time, nobody understands what I'm going through. And now I could look around and go like many more people than when I was a kid understand, because I think that obesity has become more prevalent. But I am always fascinated when I talk to somebody who I don't project that onto, who goes like, yeah, I've been dealing with it and here's the solution I found. And I'm like, wait a minute, what do you mean? Yeah. Why is at your life? I've known you for a long time and I never would have thought you had to put any effort into your weight or, you know, physicality or anything like that. You always seem to me to be a vibrant, very healthy person.
Oh, well, thanks. I'm glad I come across that way. It's all smoke and mirrors. No,
right.
No, I think it's, well, gosh, I don't even know what to say from that. I've always been health conscious, I have to say. And I've been somewhat athletic, although kind of maybe mediocre in my attempts. I was a gymnast when I was in high school. For 3 years I did that. And I was mediocre, really, in terms of the competitions. I did the trampoline, I did tumbling, floor exercise, and vaulting. So there was some strength there. I didn't do the uneven parallel bars. I didn't do the balance beam. I was a little too afraid of that. And the coach, you know, for whatever reason, I that wasn't my strength area. And I did okay. I think part of it too was just I've always been, even as a child, very could do back bends and very flexible with my body. And even, gosh, going back to third grade, thinking that I was a favorite of the gym teacher because I could do stuff like that. And I was so little. I think that's part of it. There was my petite size. I'm only 5 foot now, but back then, man, I was a peanut. And that always interested me. So here I get on the gymnastics team. They call me Cartwheel, understandably, as a nickname. I was the captain my senior year. That was kind of fun. But after I graduated from high school, I don't think I did anything really particularly athletic. Well, no, that's not true. I did, and I considered this a workout, danced.
Yeah, disco, sure.
Disco was the thing. And, you know, doing the whole la-di-da and Disco Fever, the Bee Gees and all that. And I had a dance partner, had a huge crush on him that never amounted to anything much other than we were pretty good with that. And we would win some competitions at the local pub, you know.
Nice.
That was fun. But after high school, I'm realizing this right now, I stopped being as athletic as I was in high school, and I started to put on a little weight, and I got kind of chunkified. And I also made the biggest mistake. This is taking some of your older listeners back to a time when Dorothy Hamill, you might remember her name from, she was a skater, an ice skater, and beautiful. And she became famous not only because she was a good skater, but she had the wedge haircut.
Right. So
remember when she did that one move? She's like, she's got one of her feet, she's touching her head all the way, like a back bend on one foot, and her hair fanned up. And from the top, it was just like, wow, she became all about this haircut. So I'm thinking, I want to get my haircut like a wedge. So this was like so insane. I didn't know where to go. I wasn't going to get my hair cut. It was long. I had long, beautiful hair. And I went to, why did I do this? A barber. I said, just cut it like Dorothy Hamill. You know Dorothy Hamill? He's like, no. I said, she's the one, the skater. I had to convince him. Wrong, big mistake. And the hair looked horrible. And so I go into my freshman year in college and I'm fat and I'm over and I've got a horrible haircut. And I felt so ugly. But it was okay though, because I killed it in college. I killed it with my voice and speech. They didn't care what I look like. It's how funny are you, or how dramatic, or how good of an actress are you? And I continued to do really well, and the hair and the body didn't matter. And so I just proceeded from there. But I was kind of chunky. And I mean, I could go on and on with I could tell you tons more.
Well, when did you decide like, okay, I'm going to get rid of this chunk?
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to think the first time. I did numerous kinds of diets over the years, like many people do. I remember doing like I'd already moved to California by then, and I was working in the entertainment industry. And I'm trying to think, I think I was actually not only doing, I wasn't doing The Simpsons yet. This was in the early 80s. This was like, I was doing My Little Pony, Glow Friends, Snorks, Pound Puppies, Richie Rich. but I also, I had gone to UCLA, and I dropped out of school for one quarter to do a play, and it was quite controversial for the time. Today, it would be awesome if they ever brought this play back.
What was the play?
It was called The Transgressor, and it was written by a grad student at UCLA. And I was playing, it's not unusual. I mean, going to university, you play any age. You play a 7-year-old or you could play a 70-year-old. It doesn't matter. So we had 20-year-olds playing like they were 65. And here I'm cast as a 12-year-old prepubescent girl. And the play was about a family set in the Midwest who had three kids. And the oldest son had gone off, had left home. The middle son was coming back. It's at Christmas time. The middle son is coming back to introduce his fiance to the family. So that's a big deal. And then me, I'm a girl, you know, that hasn't had my period yet, basically. And that's kind of significant in the play. So it's set at Christmas time. And the end of the first act, there's a knock on the door. And everybody suspects it's the oldest brother coming back. The door is open. And a woman is standing there. And she says, "Hi, I'm Alice." And so Kevin has gone off.
And become Alice.
Yeah. And has had a sex change operation. And the rest of the play gives me shivers thinking about it. But it's like the rest of the play was about how not only the family addresses this sensitive subject, topic, situation, person, but also how the neighbors and friends, because there were other people cast in it. So we had done it at UCLA, and the director decided, who was an MFA grad, he decided that he wanted to, I'm trying to think, there were only three of us out of the original cast that he asked us, would you recreate your part? Because I want to take it out and do it in a play, in a theater in Hollywood. Wow. But you're going to have to drop out of school for a quarter. So Ethan, I didn't tell anybody. The university still thought I was going to school. I don't know how I got away with this, but somehow I thought, this sounds cool. I totally want to do this. So that's what I did. And we got a lot of attention. The lots of reviewers came. And then one night an agent came and they came backstage afterwards and said, "We'd love to represent you." I'm like, okay. We want to do a meeting. Will you come to a meeting with us? And I said, yeah. So I set up the meeting, and now listen, I had no intention of being on camera. I had no intention of being an actress. I had done it in high school, which was fine, great. Everybody's like, "You're going to be an actress, right?" And I'm like, "Oh, I think I'm going to do the voice thing. I want to do the," and I had this, here's a little indication of how much I've changed over the years. It's like I had this viewpoint that it wasn't pretty enough. Where did that come from? You know,
yeah.
That kind of like, why would I have a viewpoint about myself? But I did. And I felt I couldn't make a living because I wasn't pretty enough, which is, oh my gosh, that is so far the opposite. A character actor has a career of working ahead of him or her. And as someone that it's based more on looks, I think far more challenging than—
And to be honest with you, a shorter lifespan they tend to.
Yeah. Can be, but more opportunities now. And if it's cultivated right and using social media and just continuing to be in your fans', you know, eyes and stuff and corresponding, I think it's better. I think it's better. It can be a trap, but it is better. Well, here I am talking.
No, yes. No, I'm saying if the career is based on good looks.
Yeah.
That seems to be like a short, like, was the looks are gonna go, and then if you don't have like real good acting chops to fall back on, there's no more career.
I agree with you. You got to back it up with talent, skill. So what's the point? So that was the play, and it ended up getting me an agent. And next thing you know, I went in for just a general meeting, and I got the lead in a pilot, a TV pilot, a series that didn't go anywhere. I look at it now and I go, no wonder it didn't go anywhere. It was like, it was not good.
Right.
But I got Twilight Zone, the movie, out of that, and started, and I did Flesh and Blood. I got to work with Rutger Hauer and Paul Verhoeven and go to Spain. Jennifer Jason Leigh played opposite me. That was an interesting experience, working in Spain. And that was harsh.
Yeah.
That was really harsh. Yeah.
I don't know often if it's Los Angeles or specifically the entertainment industry, that even if there isn't external pressure, because I always experienced tons of internal pressure, but yeah, I mean, yeah, like other people going like, you need to change. There was always a new diet. There was always some new thing that people would be like, hey, have you heard of this? You know, even if it's like just a kind of overt hint, like.
Yeah, so true. Like the pineapple diet, the Beverly Hills diet, the, I did, what was the name of it? I forget the name of it. It was one where you get stuff in a box and you add fresh fruit to it. It's a subscription kind of a thing.
Yeah, they send you the box and you can.
Nutrisystem.
Yeah,
Nutrisystem. I did it. I had success. Hey, you have success with all these diets, but the question is, are they sustainable? Right. Are you going to want it? You know, you can eat from a box and take this packaged food that's got chemicals and it's not great stuff. But you do add fresh food to it. But how do you learn? How do you take that and then make it a lifestyle? And I think that's the challenge. HCG. I did the HCG diet.
And that's like super low calorie, right? Like 500 calories a day or something.
Of course you're going to lose weight. You're starving your body to death. And the body's like, I mean, I definitely have my viewpoints about all these diets. But it was only within the last, couple years, it's really that I took this time of this COVID shutdown and it was probably a year after that. It's only been a little bit more than a year, maybe a year and a quarter ago. I made a decision, a couple decisions, that I wanted to take full responsibility for my body. And my career is going along great. Everything's moving along, doing more production than I've ever done before. Unbelievable at my age that I am creating really, really fun content with a production company now.
Yeah.
But my body, I still, after having two kids, it's like, I don't feel comfortable sitting. I don't feel comfortable driving in my car. It's like I'm 5 foot and there's gotta be a smaller person living inside this thing here, you know?
Right.
So, for me, what I did was I just thought it's got to be, and here's the deal, you have to find your own thing. I can give you my successful action, might not work for you. And it, you know, but for me, and I came up with an arbitrary number, but I just put myself on a low-cal diet. And at 1,500 calories, that's enough calories for somebody to lose weight, because clearly I was eating more than 1,500. For a height and size of me, that at 1,500, and I didn't ask any questions. I didn't Google it. I just said, you know, I think 1,500 sounds right. And don't ask me where I got it. It was just kind of like my own understanding. So I put myself on a program and that was it. And I really was religious with it. I stuck to it. Everything had to be weighed. Everything had to be counted for. And I think I've only gone over like maybe one time and it was only like 50 calories over. But I still, to this day, I still do it because it keeps like checks and balances in for me.
Do you find that you still have to weigh and measure as much, or are you able to like eyeball four ounces of chicken?
Totally. I can eyeball it. It's about the size of my palm. Yeah. No fingers or thumb included. It's about like that. And I do it. And here's the other thing that I do, Ethan, as a successful action. And I'm telling you, it works, because I started and I only weigh myself once a week because I want to monitor. I got to keep, again, balancing checks on this. So I weigh myself every Tuesday morning between like 6 and 8 a.m. And I'll get a little tiny bit graphic here. It's after I've had a bowel movement. It's like I'm naked. Whoa, TMI, but it's like, that's how I do it. And it's like standing there on the scale, and it doesn't really matter what scale you use, as long as you use the same scale. Right. You can't go away on a week, 2 week vacation and use their scale because it's not calibrated the same as yours. So I use my scale, same one all the time. So speaking of which, when I do go on a vacation or even take off to go be with friends for a weekend, I don't I don't have as much attention on what I'm eating. I will have French fries. I will have a little, I'll have dessert. I won't have a whole piece, but I'll just kind of keep it. What's the word? I just put a little more control on it.
Moderation.
Yeah, in moderation, totally. But I don't want to not enjoy myself. And then on Tuesday, I'll weigh myself. And as expected, I'll be up.
Right.
Since April, I have noticed, because I went back just a couple days ago and I was looking at it, and I looked at my weights and I stabilized at where I am right now back in April, which was that was probably about 10 months of doing this calorie counting. It took me about 10 months and I lost 17 pounds in that time. And my body regulated. I'm like 125, 127 right now. And I made a decision, if I ever get above 130, it's like, whoa, what are you doing?
Right.
You're off the charts right now. That's not okay. But it's never gotten there. I will gain a couple pounds and I'll go right back to drinking the amount of water that I drink. I drink about 64 ounces of water a day.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty religious about that too. I drink a lot of fluids and the calorie counting. And then when you add exercise on top of that, it's like, and if I go up, I just go, okay, back to the program. And the next time I weigh myself, it's gone down. And it goes up a little bit, goes down a little bit, goes up a little bit. And it's kind of like normal. It's kind of a normal
condition. It's like an equilibrium.
Yeah, that's right. And you're never going to stay the same weight. That's ridiculous to think. Nothing stays the same. It's either getting better or getting worse, but you got to know how to tweak it just right so that this is happy and I'm happy.
Yeah. When you got to the weight you wanted, when you got to the point where you were like, okay, this is cool. Now I know what to do if this number goes up or if I'm feeling like yucky or whatever. Did you increase your food at all or did you?
No.
No.
No, I keep doing 1500. And I've noticed that it's like I kind of thought that I wanted to get down to like 120. I thought, let's do 120. But what happened in April is that I wasn't really losing any more weight. It kind of stuck around 125, 127. And I continued to just do the normal thing of the 1500 with all the exercise and all that. And it's like my body said, this is it. This is right for your size, for your height and bone structure, I think. And also muscle. I'm strong. I've got some I don't have the same muscle content that I had when I was on the gymnastics team. I weighed 119 and I was heavy. I was heavy at 119, but I was at 18 years old. And the other girls were like 100 pounds. My friend was 105 pounds. I'm like, oh man, I'm fat. And Ethan, I was not fat. I had more muscle mass. And I did not understand that. So now with more education and there's such an abundance of information on the internet that you can find. I mean, obviously you've got to kind of weed through and find out what makes sense, who's saying it, what are they an opinion leader in this area? Like, what's the deal,
Yeah, and I think with a lot of that, I go into any of these things and I go like, anytime somebody is pushing a diet and they're making statements that all people need to do something in a certain way, I'm often like, okay, I got to get rid of that, right? I've got to cut through that noise. There's some bullshit there, right? Because different bodies are going to react differently to different things. And some bodies burn glucose at a lower intensity rate than others, right? So you could have a guy burning fat at a really high rate before his body kicks in and requires glucose. Like, these are just, there isn't like a one size fits all thing but you know, and most of the big fad diets are making these kind of empirical claims about everybody, you know, being allergic to cucumber skin. And, you know, I get that there's some toxins in cucumber skin, but like, if you're not having like severe autoimmune reactions to it, this is probably not going to handle your life by just removing it from your diet.
No, it's a brilliant comment. I couldn't agree more. It's like we're all individuals. Our bodies are all so different, even within your own family. You know, I have a sister who was taller, but slender, you know, and if it matters, she was probably an A-type blood, you know, me, short and a little bit stockier, gymnast kind of a body. I'm O negative. If that has anything, that was another diet, the blood type diet,
you know, and look, I mean,
apparently,
yeah, I've done all of them. I did blood type. I did Beverly Hills. I did South Beach. You know, there was a period where they were all named after some place. I did the Wichita Falls diet, like all of these things. And I just go like, okay, I bought into blood type because my whole life with my whole physical situation was going to be handled if I just ate these foods. But guess what? I can overeat all of that stuff too. Totally. I can overeat meat and sweet potatoes like it's nobody's business.
Yeah. Sweet potatoes. Oh, don't get me started. I learned how to, I went away for a while and while I was gone living in this condo, it's like I was introduced to the hot air fryer.
Oh yeah. Oh.
I love it, man. Yeah. Come over. I'll make you a hot air fryer dinner. It's like I became an expert at cooking things like asparagus and sweet potato fries. You could cook anything. You could do an egg. You could make a perfect soft-boiled egg, 11 minutes, 350 degrees, you know, with a hot air fryer, but you got to have an ice thing sitting right next to it so it stops the cooking.
Yeah.
You know, you learn all these hints, and I've shared this with the people like, oh my gosh, I want you to make me dinner. That would be...
Yeah. Do you think that a big part of it, or was it helpful to you? I don't know how much eating out you did prior to this, but I imagine trying to stick to 1500 calories a day, like for real, not super easy if you're eating out.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal. And I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting. So cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. 4 flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free.
It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
No, and it's not super easy if you're eating at home.
Right.
It's a lot of work, and I think that's the same for any diet. I think it takes a lot of attention. You have to plan out, and the more you can do that and make take the time, and if you're married, it's a thing that you can do as a couple, and you create this game together and go grocery shopping, and if you can make it fun, then you'll be able to stick to it. But if it becomes a drudgery and it becomes work, I can see how it'd be very easy to like make one big mistake over a weekend or at a wedding or a bachelor party or whatever it is, then all of a sudden, you know, you're off the wagon. And it's got to be doable. So that sustainability thing is the key. But I don't anything worth getting, I think it takes work to get it. There's nothing easy.
Right. Did you find that when you started to really look at the kind of energy density to the food that you were consuming and then eating it, that you started to make choices and found yourself going like, well, you know, a cup of rice has 200 calories and here's how I feel after I eat it. But the sweet potato fries have, you know, you can actually eat more sweet potato fries than you can rice by volume or weight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Yeah. And so did you find those choices wound up informing how you stuck to it?
Yeah, a little bit, sure. Because if they offer sweet potato fries, I will do that. To do regular Idaho potato fries is like, I'm going, I want to be smart. I still am smart about it.
Yeah.
I'm not throwing it all out the window and just like exploding. But I do allow myself to have, I don't really eat some stuff that I used to eat. I don't eat anymore. Ice cream, because I don't like the way I bloat like instantly. I'm so lactose intolerant. And it's uncomfortable, Ethan. It's like, I don't like feeling that way. But it's taken me 3/4 of my life to recognize I don't have to do that, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's so weird because I even found like a diet ice cream that's got 400 calories per pint versus like a normal pint of ice cream has 1600 on average. And even that, when I eat it, I feel kind of crappy. And so I have a freezer chock full of this stuff because I eat it very rarely because I go like, do I want to give into this need for pleasure and take whatever crappy feeling comes with it? Occasionally I go, I want that. And I don't mind that crappy feeling, but it is so seldom now.
Yeah. There was a book that I read. This must have been easily, golly, 30 years ago, maybe. Yeah. 30 years. I think it was called, it's called The Sugar Blues. And it was a little paperback book that I got, and I read that thing. I could not put that down cover to cover in one sitting. And I was so interested. It was the history of sugar and how it's like what it does to your body physically. And I'm like, wow. And that actually really helped me.
Yeah.
It kind of just gave me the truth on what happens when your body takes in something like that. And to this day, I always considered popcorn a vegetable because it is
corn. Yeah,
it is a vegetable. Yeah. Are you
popcorn and French fries? It's a salad.
So, popcorn is a weakness of mine. I found this one popcorn brand called Lesser Evil, and it's got Himalayan salt. I don't know whoever discovered pink Himalayan salt. I don't really care, but it does stay salty. I'm not into a sweet popcorn at all. But this it's 90 calories for a bag, and I'm going, damn, there's my go-to treat. I love that, and I love a thing called Snacklins. I know I'm like promoting these products, but it's like that's also 90 calories per a bag, and they're crunchy. They're like, and it gives you that satisfaction of being able to bite into something. And I like
What are the Snacklins?
Snacklins are made out of mushroom, yucca, and onion.
Wow.
It's an awesome bag that's a pretty good size, and it's quite satisfying. So I don't do it every single day because I've found a number of these kind of like go-to snacks. And some people do have this belief, and I don't, you know, I don't diss them for this. They can have that belief. For me, it doesn't hurt. When I still add it up on my calories for the day.
Wait, what's the belief that they have?
They have the belief that if you do snacks, it's like you should never snack.
Oh,
just do little four meals throughout the day, no snacks.
I disagree. Again, I think it's you got to go individual.
Yeah, you do. You got to
snacking works for you. Why would you not snack? Because some random person said you shouldn't snack? That's stupid.
I didn't want to tell her that, but yeah, I said, no, I get it. I get it. But for me, it works. And so, I'm going to do it because it's very satisfying. The other thing that I did in addition to the food, and I'm pretty sure this would be the same for everyone, and you'll have to smack me down if you disagree with me.
Okay.
You got to have some kind of exercise, people. Diet alone ain't going to do it. Your muscles, they'll become flaccid. You know, you want to strengthen your muscles. I think muscle, although it weighs more than fat, it also burns calories more than I think when you're working out.
Well, just having muscle. I think fat in and of itself, the way that fat increases your energy need is just because your muscles are working by carrying it. The fat itself requires no fuel, but muscle requires fuel. Even if, you know, I agree. I think that it might be the computation different people use to come to this conclusion may be very different, right? One guy might go like, I want muscle because it's a net healthier body in the long run, or one guy might go, I want more muscle because I'll get to eat more food because my body will require more food. So it's hard to, you know, and then there is certainly a point where you go like, maybe that's too much muscle, because there are some very overly muscled people where it's like, I could totally see somebody going like, I don't need that much muscle.
Right. And that's like a personal, it's very subjective. But the other thing is, look, check this out.
Nice. The gunshot. Yeah.
Maybe
that's
good
definition. That's awesome.
Now I'm not there. You can see I'm doing it.
Yeah. But even when you're not flexing, there's real definition in that bicep. That is awesome.
I did a little kettlebell right before I got up. No, I'm kidding.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It just looks pretty. I think it's on men and women, just having that muscle tonus. You look better in clothes than if you don't have any, you know, if you're not strengthened that way.
Yeah, I agree. And it is scientifically shown to be healthier to have the more muscle, you know, up to a point. You know, you could go look at these like gigantic bodybuilders who are 300 plus pounds of pure muscle. And you go like, at that point, you're probably putting too much stress on your heart for if you're talking strictly about health.
Right. Yeah, absolutely right. I tried. I mean, I know your history is like extensive, the whole bicycle thing and your commitment to that and how many miles you did a day and just the support you got even from your family. That I just was so impressed when I was listening to you. And the cycling at a gym, the stationary cycling bike, I tried it. And I've heard that if you keep doing it, your bottom will get used to it. And I just was a little executive princess in that way, that it wasn't my thing. Riding the bike wasn't the thing. I tried golfing, the walking, that would have been okay. I had a boyfriend at the time, and we did that for a little bit. And my drive down the center drive, I had a pretty, not strong enough to get me to the hole. But once we broke up, that was the end of that game.
Right.
So not too long ago, this was April of 2020, my neighbor, who's a good friend of mine, played pickleball. And she kept telling me, you got to play pickleball. What is it? I'd never heard of it. Well, apparently it's the fastest growing sport in America. And like so many people are playing it. It was developed like in 1965. These friends created it off the coast of Washington State. And it's just been growing ever since. So I played a little tennis. You could play tennis, ping pong, badminton, if you've got that good hand-eye coordination thing. And I picked it up just like that. So now I am like, oh, I love pickleball because it's fantastic exercise, but it's just better than that. It's fun.
Right.
It's way better than just like doing crunches and doing like fire hydrants and doing aerobic standing, you know, to YouTube. Although I definitely continue to do YouTube exercises. I think you get on that one, I think it's called PS. I don't know what it stands, personal. It's a site.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, where you do, it's like you follow along to a video, right?
Yeah, and there's so many teachers, and it's all free, and I want to work on abs today. I want to work on glutes. I want to work on upper arms. I want to do it. So I kind of balance between that and pickleball. And one more thing for the whole package is Pilates.
Nice.
And my body has, I swear I grew an inch. I swear I'm taller.
It does a lot of stretching you, right?
Yeah. And my body just loves it. And again, you got to find out. Maybe you're more of a yoga person. I wasn't yoga. They're vastly different.
Yeah.
But Pilates, damn. I'm like, whoa, what are we doing today?
Brandy took me to a Pilates class, and I will say it was after I'd gone to the gym and done a really, really intense leg day. And she was like, don't overdo it because we have Pilates. And I was like, oh, Pilates, that's a chick thing. That's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So, and then I went to Pilates and they hurt me. They kicked my ass.
Yeah. The equipment, this guy that created this, I just, hats off, he's long gone. It was in the 1800s, I think he developed this whole thing, and it's been passed along with all of his original drawings and the mechanics of it, the equipment is, it's mind blowing how you can take one piece and it does a gazillion things. It just
blows
me away.
And it's super low impact.
Yes, for sure. And geez, the coach that I have, she's amazing because she personalizes it for me and for my body. And I just, some days I'll come in there and say I'd gone away for the weekend and played pickleball and I'm super sore. And I did some good damage to my body. And she says to me, I can tell by the way you're walking, let's just do some stretching today. And she'll take rollers. And I'm telling you that it's not a day off for me.
Yeah.
It still hurts. It's like she's rolling on my thigh or my, I don't quite know the names of the part, the side of my thigh. And when
the
it first,
T-band probably.
Yeah, the T-band, all these areas of your body that will hold on to tension and stuff. And with a few minutes of doing this, it releases all that. And it enables me then to be able to carry on without any more pain. It's just, I find it just really beneficial for me.
Yeah. And all of this stuff that you're talking about is stuff that you really enjoy, or you seem to at least enjoy doing, like even the Pilates, you seem to enjoy doing that. And like, I think it's hard to convince people to do things that they're absolutely sure they're going to hate. I think there are things that I thought I would hate and then I did them and I wound up really enjoying them. But I do think it's important to find some way of moving that you enjoy doing, because forced movement sucks.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I think you nailed it, because this is my program, and it may not work for you, but even if it's if it's a sport, I think it's just because it's fun. It can become really fun. If it's just exercise for the sake of exercise, for me, that's, I don't know, it's not so fun. It's like way too much attention. There's got to be some entertainment. And pickleball, I can play singles. I love singles. It's way more exercise doing singles. That kicks my ass, and that's sweating.
Singles at pickleball?
Yeah.
Okay.
Singles. It's a small court, but you got to still get from side to side. It's tough and it's challenging, and it keeps me running my body instead of my body running me. It's like putting me running my body around. Doubles is super fun too, but it's different because you've got a partner there. I don't know that it's not necessarily easier though to play. It's just different. You have to kind of read your partner's mind. Are you staying up? Am I staying back? If we both back, then we both miss the ball that just goes over the net. How are we going to do it? And you have to kind of have a real coordination thing with your partner there. And I like that too. They're both workouts, but for a good aerobic workout, I like the singles. And I've got enough friends that I can invite over because I went ahead and I liked it so much, put a court in my yard. I had chickens there at one time. Way too much valuable real estate for chickens. It's like, oh, come on, lady girls. You're going to go to the back of the property, over there, smaller space, put a pretty pickleball court in and use it. And it's like right there for me to use.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think that we have kind of, or we are evolving into being more and more sedentary. And this is a major contributing factor to obesity. We don't need to move really to live life. We don't need to really do a whole much of anything with our bodies, you know, compared to what we used to, hunter, gatherer, looking for shelter, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Our body was out in the world. And now we've got, you know, DoorDash and Uber and our phones. So
absolutely. It is something to really take a look at individually for your listeners. How much it's convenient. It's really convenient to have that all done for you, but at what expense?
Yeah. Yeah. And then just the desire to store fat, because our bodies feel safe, I think, when they're storing fat. It's like a savings account of energy, you know?
Yeah. And that's why I think for me, again, you know, when I found out what worked for me, that when I'm pretty strict during the week, or say the next trip I'm going to do is going to be mid-August. Up until then, I'm going to be just doing what I normally do, and no deviations So then when I go away for that weekend, you know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I'll come back, and, you know, it's kind of like, you don't want to get your body into a position of like feeling like, oh my God, you've changed. And what's going on? And I think when somebody does kind of a yo-yo type thing, it's because the body is kind of freaking out in a way. It's like wanting to hold on to, just to give you an example, if you don't drink enough water, your body is going to hold on to water. We have to have water. And if you're not replacing the water that you sweat, and don't we sweat something like a cup of water a day?
Yeah, even if we're not moving, but you know, even if it's chilly, we're sweating a little.
Yeah, that's right. It's constantly recycling. And if you're not replacing that water that you're getting rid of, the body's going to hold on to it. And for me, I realized, wow, that's why I'm so inflamed. I've got inflammation going on here. So when I started drinking more water, yes, I was peeing more for sure, like a lot. But it's like when I would measure myself or weigh it was clear that my body really loved that I was drinking water. It wasn't thinking it was, you know, starving or like I was becoming super dehydrated, you know?
Yeah. This is amazing. So you're killing it right now, and you are happy enough that you can foresee yourself doing this for the rest of your life. Yeah.
I mean, I may end up at some point in time saying, wow, I think I better focus a little more on doubles rather than, you know, playing singles. I'm not there yet. Yeah. I'm in my seventh decade of life, in
well into
it, which doesn't mean, for any math like flunkies out there, that doesn't mean I'm in my 70s. I'm just telling you. It's like
we're in the 21st century. It's only the year 2000. Yes.
Yeah, and I look better. I feel like I see pictures of myself when I was in my 20s and in my 30s, and you know, I had my kids when I was in my 30s, and it was going on. I was packing their lunches and eating it while I was packing it and eating the same food that I made for my kids. That's a reality. Mothers go through that. And even fathers during mother's pregnancy, they're gaining just as much weight as their wife is gaining because they're eating the same food because she's cooking it or he's cooking it for her. And, you know, it's just, I guess it really is when you put what you put your attention on, you're going to be able to solve that problem. And if you don't have a lot of attention on what you're eating, you know, just grab anything because it's convenient. You know?
Yeah, I think, and this is very general, but this was my experience so many times, but I think I always wanted a one-word solution or the easiest solution I could imagine. And for me, I had this bizarre computation in my head that weight loss alone was the solution, and that once I achieved weight loss, I would be handled. And this was just not the case because it kind of neglected how I gained weight in the first place.
Yeah.
And without really addressing all of that and going, oh, I kind of need to take my life apart and like undo all this stuff that got me to the point that I needed to change. And that's actually a lot more work than just losing weight. Losing weight, I've lost weight on every diet you've mentioned today. Yeah. Every single one, I lost weight. None of them solved the problem I was trying to solve. Weight loss alone wasn't that solution. Yeah. It was really a reorganization of my life.
I so get that. That makes so much sense. Some people eat, it's a comfort sort of a thing. It makes them feel good. They have some sort of a loss in their life, and they, you know, and so they go to the refrigerator. They take themselves out, and when they're hungry, they go shopping when they're hungry, and that's a ridiculous time to go shopping. You know, it's not going to solve, like what you said, the underlying thing that you're trying, that there's a situation there that you're not really looking at.
Yeah, there's also a lot of, in the diet world, data that's either grossly negligent or partially true. So like, you know, did you ever do keto or Atkins?
Yeah, I did. And Atkins didn't work for me. And I think there's a disclaimer that says 2% of the people that do this, it won't work for. Hello, I guess that was me. I was pouring it on, man. I love steak and putting butter on it and as much fat. Oh, man, it did not work for me. I was so bummed.
Well, and here's the other kind of point is like, if you remove all carbohydrates from your diet, you should lose weight simply because you'll get rid of a lot of water, right?
So yeah.
That nobody goes into a diet. I mean, most people, I'm sure somebody goes like, I just give me a water pill, I'll pee a lot, and then that's the weight I want to lose. But most of us are going into a diet thinking, I want to lose fat. Mm-hmm. And it is possible on Atkins to gain fat and lose weight on the scale because you're just getting rid of a bunch of water. Mm. And so there's, you know, this idea where you can eat 10,000 calories or, you know, 10,000 calories a day in bacon or T-bone steaks and lose weight. It's like, yeah, maybe the first week because you're pissing out a bunch of glycogen, but that's not a long-term solution for anyone.
True that, but man, don't say bacon. Bacon goes good with everything.
I love bacon. I do one high fat day a week, which, because for the most part, and I don't eat high carbohydrates, but like I eat moderate carbohydrates and kind of lower fat. And on my day when I don't go to the gym, I increase my fat. It's by far my favorite day of the week. I get avocados and olive oil. And like, that's really fun for me. I prefer that. I wish I could just eat high fat and not have to worry about anything else. But the reality is, I still would have to count calories. I still would have to do that math and make sure that my energy balance was correct.
Yep. I get it. I so get it. And full disclosure on my end, when you're talking about a cheat day, because I weigh myself on Tuesday morning, like right after I weigh myself, tends to be the time where I will have like one of the things I also love to eat. It's pretty low cal, actually. It's about 190 calories a cup, but it's yogurt and it's fruit. And it's Greek yogurt and with like monk fruit to sweeten it up. It's not that many calories, but I don't have it every single night as a dessert because it's so rich.
Yeah.
I will have it or.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Somebody will give me like a here's another cheat that I will have. I will go to my pantry and it's called, I forget the brand. I think it's BS, but it's a vanilla flavored almond butter. And it's really high in calories. It's like 190 calories for 2 tablespoons.
Yeah.
And I'll go in there and scoop up like 1 tablespoon or a heaping teaspoon. And it, it's like pleasure. It's like taking at Christmas when you get presents and you get people tend to give you chocolate whatevers. It's like if it just had a little chocolate added to it, it's like such a spoiler treat. But I don't disregard it. I add it. But that's the day that I will say, I'm temperate about it, but I take,
yeah.
I account for it.
I was at a hotel in the Midwest and there was nothing really great for me to eat in the hotel. And I was walking around and looking for stuff and there was nothing really anywhere near me. And I stumbled into a Starbucks and I was like, oh, I see fruit and eggs in a package. And I bought all of them. I bought 10 of these packages of fruit and eggs. And then I got back to my room and I opened them up and I found a little thing of almond butter in with the fruit and eggs. And I'm very much like, that's a fat. I'm on a carb day. I'm not eating the almond butter. And towards the end of the night, I was like doing the math and I was like, oh, I still have like 500 calories left. And I opened one of these almond butter packs. It didn't have vanilla in it, but I hadn't had anything like that in a while. And boy, was it good. What a treat. Just a tablespoon of almond butter.
I know these little things that we like, oh my God, it's so good. But you know, it's a nice treat. It's a diversion. It's a treat, but temperate, you know, account for it, whatever.
Yeah. Amazing. Nancy, thank you so much. This has been a really fun conversation.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Nice seeing you too. I know this is an audio kind of a thing, but such a pleasure, Ethan. I just adore you. Love watching what you're doing. The changes that have happened with you. You're such an opinion leader in this area. It's admirable.
Thank you. You're setting
such a great example. I'm telling you, it gives people this podcast that you have can give people a whole new lease on life, listening to your viewpoints and others' viewpoints about how to take care of your body.
Yeah, and more than anything, for people who have had a lot of failures, because I've had a lot of failures, I just want to spread the message that, like, it can be done.
Beautiful. You
know? Yeah.
Well, such a pleasure to be a part of that.
All right,
thanks for having me, buddy.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
And now for the Q&A.
Today's question comes from Karen.
Hi, Karen.
Karen says, hi, Ethan and Paige. Congrats on a great podcast.
Thanks, Karen.
She says, I'm wondering if you have some suggestions on how to overcome the all or nothing mindset.
Karen, the all or nothing mindset is a really, really, really tough one.
I know. I started laughing. I'm like, please, can you help me? She says, either I'm smashing it at the gym and meal prepping, or I'm not going to the gym and eating junk. The thought, well, I had this cookie candy, I can just finish this as well. It's frustrating and my progress is constantly stalled. Have you struggled with this and do you have any suggestions? All the best from Iceland.
Oh, nice. Iceland. I picture only very fit people who are also simultaneously very large people in Iceland.
And tall.
Yeah. And formerly Vikings.
That's what I picture too.
And they eat fermented shark, which doesn't sound super appetizing.
Right.
And penguins, maybe. Okay. Yes. All or nothing. What's Karen's last name? I guess you can't say it, but I bet it's pretty cool. Is it somebody's daughter?
Oh, interesting. So I don't usually say people's last names, so I'm not going to.
But is it somebody's daughter?
As in someone you know?
No. Like, is so-and-so's daughter part of her last name?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Is there a way you say daughter?
Yeah, like Icelandic? Sigmund's daughter or Frank's daughter or like Herbert's daughter. But I'm not saying those aren't exactly.
No, that. I know what you're saying. And now just reading it, I kind of think it is.
Yeah. Those are the coolest names. They're so cool.
Great.
And literally, I think the way that works is like that was her dad's name and she is his daughter.
Whoa. I'm going to look at this while you're answering. I'm looking it up.
Okay.
Okay.
It's not spelled exactly the same way we spell daughter.
Right.
But I think Icelandic people are so cool for all those reasons.
Yes.
And they have like volcanoes. I've never been to Iceland, but it seems like such a rad place to go.
And I just looked it up. And yes, she is somebody's daughter.
She's somebody's daughter. That's so cool. I mean, obviously she's somebody's daughter, but that's like and also literally somebody's daughter.
Yes.
God, I've digressed here. All or nothing.
All or nothing.
Yeah. Okay. So I was very much all or nothing for a long time. And I guess the thing that most helped me with the all or nothing thing was I was always working towards a goal, which I believed was the end. So and not that I always made it to that goal, because many times I would like burn out before I got there. But this need to kind of like damage myself well, like harm myself into being fit or, you know, punish myself into being thinner by like withholding an extreme amount of calories, usually was kind of tied into I have to get to some point, right? And the idea was that point was the finish line. So I'm going to work really hard there. Now, that's just for me. Maybe you're just all or nothing and you're going like, my life is going to be better if I'm all forever. The problem with that is it's unsustainable, right? This all kind of mentality in the gym, this kind of kill yourself every day, you know, really does statistically and also anecdotally for me lead to injury, which then you're really fucked because you're nothing at that point, whether you want to be or not, right? You're sitting in bed healing. You can't go to the gym, whatever it is. You're overtraining. So the way that I really kind of reshaped my thinking about this was really looking at it as like, I'm never going to be cured. I am never going to be a thin person who feels really good about themselves, who has high self-esteem, who never has to watch their step around food or be diligent in maintaining a schedule at the gym. That's never going to happen. There is no cure for me. There is no magical weight I'm going to get to where I don't have to think about it anymore. This is going to be a lifelong thing for me. So how can I think about my life and go like, oh, there is no end. There's no finish line. What do I want out of this? What is sustainable forever? What is not going to drive me crazy, not going to make me, you know, so kind of make life so lackluster that it's not even worth living, right? You know what I mean? Like if somebody said to me, and there were certainly points when I had these thoughts that like if I just couldn't taste, couldn't experience joy with food anymore, I would be better. And now I go like, no, that would suck. Like that would really suck. I enjoy the way food tastes. You know, that's certainly a part of it. Now, if I'm leaning more into the enjoyment of food than I am into what it's doing to my body and how it's servicing me, then I can get in trouble. But even within the confines of what I'm doing strictly, I want my food to taste good. It's, you know what I mean? Like I fuck around with sauces and, you know, there are some people who really don't care about the taste of food and like they're just, it's just fuel. And while I try to do that, I still want to get a little bit of pleasure out of it. You know, I'll add a hot sauce. And for that reason, like it's got no calories and it brings me a little bit of a hint of joy, right? So how can I live forever realizing that it is forever that I have to be kind of thinking about this? And while I say that, day one, the day that you go like, oh, this is forever, is not the same as a few years into thinking about it forever. You kind of start to figure it out and your life changes to the point where you're not thinking about it as much, right? So if at first you're going like, God, I need to radically change my life, and not in the pursuit of one specific goal, but in the pursuit of maintaining something forever. Those are two different things, right? Like if somebody said to you, you got to run a marathon, training for a marathon is a specific thing. And then you do the marathon. And if you've got nothing beyond that, maybe you don't have to do it anymore if you didn't fall in love with running. But if you said, I got to run, you know, 2 miles or a 5K or something every day or once a week for the rest of my life, that's going to look a little bit different than training for a marathon. So for me, it was the difference between short-term thinking and long-term thinking. I want to design my program so that I can do it forever, right? And mm-hmm. There are certain things that are going to get my weight down. And then I'm going to break those up with maintenance periods because maintenance is the forever part. And that's just as hard to somebody who is dieting as, you know what I mean? Like if you were just living kind of mindlessly and gaining weight and then one day woke up and went like, I got to lose weight. Right. And then you lose weight and then you go like, well, now I'm going to go back to how I was living before I lost weight. You're going to gain the weight back. Right. So if you want to maintain your weight loss, it's maintenance. Learning how to do that before you arrive there, I think is really smart. Right. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be like an IndyCar racer, learning to drive in your first race is maybe not the best strategy, right? But if you're learning little bits and pieces while you, you know, start driving, I don't know, that fucking analogy went to shit for me, but my point is,
where you were going.
Right. Like my point is, if you're thinking that you achieve something at the end of a diet, but that you don't have to then do any work on yourself and you just are going to magically not have any of the habits and behaviors that existed prior to the diet, or if it's a gym thing, like I'm honestly saying all this and I'm picturing some CrossFit chick who's Icelandic, you know what I mean? Who just like kills it in the gym every day. That's the only picture of an Icelandic gal that I have in my head. Somebody's daughter, Karen, somebody's daughter from Iceland. And I'm going like, God, maybe she doesn't need to, maybe she's not talking about weight loss at all. She's just hardcore in the gym and I'm missing her entirely. And she's like, I don't want to be so hardcore in the gym. And I'm again just saying I would try to design a thing that's forever, right? Yeah. Because you can't, if you really take into account the fact that your body needs rest, you have to also, there's as much occurring in rest as there is in activity, right? If you're lifting weights and you want to get stronger or have your muscles be bigger, or even if you're just preserving muscle tissue in a calorie deficit, right? A lot happens in rest. Like you do this thing to your muscles and you damage them to some degree. And then you have to give them time to repair. And when they repair stronger or they repair bigger. Or while you're losing weight, they repair to maintain their size, right? So these are the different ways I think about resistance training. And a lot happens in rest. So if you're just damaging yourself every day at the gym, right? Because it is, I mean, that's part of what we're doing in the gym. We're damaging our body so that it can get stronger or maintain strength, right? There's a point where it's going to be negative. It's going to be so much damage that it can't repair itself. And then what the fuck are we doing? Are we just masochists in the gym, right? And then what that leads to is injury, which stops you from continuing to do that. So if we're just strictly talking about gym stuff, you got to design a program that isn't so extreme, because when I think about extreme, it has only led me to injury. And so when you fall off of that extreme, even if it's not from injury, it's very easy, because that extreme is so hard, to just go like, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so that's how I think about the all or nothing type of a mindset that I used to have. It's like the things that I'm doing for my body, I hope to be doing for the rest of my life. Now I have to design something that's sustainable, that I can stick to, you know, and that's number one. What can I do for the rest of my life? I can eat mostly healthy. And when I say health, I mean like, really the first parameter of that for me is within my caloric boundaries. And then in the gym, I can design workouts where like I miss days all the time. And then I just do it the next day, right? If I have work or something comes up, it's like not the end of the world if I miss a day. Miss a day, I can just do it the next day. It's not so extreme that if I miss a day, there's even a temptation of giving up.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome.
I feel like I went some weird places on that one.
No, I think you answered it perfectly. And I it's a fantastic reminder. And yeah, I've got a lot out of your answer. And I venture to guess Karen will too.
And Karen, if you are exactly what I'm picturing, then we're cool. And if you're not one of the, you know, really the people that I know of, like, who I could point to and go like, that gal's from Iceland are CrossFit, famous CrossFit girls. And so I'm really sorry that I'm just assuming all Icelandic women are like, you know, Valkyries.
Right. But I learned something about the names and how people from Iceland can have this somebody's daughter name. I didn't know.
Karen is someone's daughter.
Yeah. I love it.
We're not going to say his name.
No. Or hers.
Well, it's usually a dude, I think.
It isn't always.
It really?
Let me give you that hint.
It's, okay. So she's a gal's daughter.
She is.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. I thought it was all like...
I mean, unless I'm reading this wrong, and now I'm going to just email her and ask her about it. Unless I'm reading it wrong, I'm pretty sure she's a gal's daughter in this name.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Karen. Thank you for that, Ethan. And if anyone else out there has a question that they would like answered on this podcast, you can email it to us at AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.